Running out of wine at a wedding feast was apparently a really big deal. Not just a disappointment to be met with a shrug and a what are you going to do, but it was some kind of like social and existential crisis. Maybe it was a sign of bad fortune for the couple. I don't know. Maybe it was some kind of foreboding sign of the state of the universe. Whatever the layers of the situation, it was enough for Jesus' mother to loud whisper at him upon his arrival, "They have no more wine." Is there any better image of New Year's 2022 than a party with family and friends that should be really happy and launch new life going forward, but then the wine runs dry, the food runs out, the band's off key? Talk about a black fly in your Chardonnay, except there's no Chardonnay. Personally, I can't imagine how it was an isolated occurrence running low on libation. Wedding celebrations lasted several days. Everyone you ever knew was on the invite list. And it was a feast, a time of delight and hope and blessing for the new couple and their families and the communities that helped raise them. Weddings are always more than about what's happening with just the two people. It's about them, and it's about more than just them. See what I mean? We see that today. When officiating weddings, I used to be pretty focused on the groom. I remembered what it was like to stand in those too tight shoes and that rented tux. I enjoyed watching her come through the doors, to be by his side, and I remember my own moments in those shoes. And I still do, but I'm older now. Now, I'm watching Dad. My eyes are on him. What's he feeling at this exact moment? What's it like to make that walk down that aisle? To the dad's credit, and maybe even more to the bride's and groom's credit, most dads walking down the aisle seem genuinely happy to be doing what they're doing. And they nail their lines after going over and over it again at the rehearsal. I'm watching Dad, but I'm also watching the others in the room, those who are married, and those who are not yet married, and those who may never be. I'm thinking about my own vows and theirs. When the couple shares their vows to one another, it's a prompt for all of us to renew our own, to celebrate what's been good, to mourn for some what's been lost. And it's an occasion for all of us to renew our love in God who loves us. Marriage is a favorite image of the relationship between God and the church. The New Testament uses it to describe Christ as the groom and the church as the bride of Christ. Isaiah uses it to describe the covenant between God, the people, and the land. A desolate place will now be called married. At a little old village of Cana in Galilee, it wasn't just the occasion for a man and a woman beginning their life together as a married couple. It was also a renewal of every marriage that ever was, and a symbolic reinstitution of the covenantal relationship between God and God's people. Marriage is dripping with spiritual symbolism, and the wedding feast is like the heavenly banquet. Weddings aren't just about the couple. And the wedding story in John's gospel isn't just about one couple's wedding in Cana. It's a recreation story of a world that finds itself impossibly, unexpectedly, painfully desolate, in need of grace and not knowing where it will come from or if it ever will. When Jesus' mother says to him, "They have no wine," she is sharing compassionate concern to her son for a host family about to face a socially awkward situation. But also hear Mary's plea as priestly intercession to the Lord for all humanity, for every person everywhere whose cup has run dry. For a people who have nothing left in their cup, what now? And not just left in their cup when you think about it. That would be a potent metaphor by itself. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst, for they shall be satisfied. That's good news. But this story paints a picture that goes even beyond, because it's not just a story of one person's own thirst. It's a story of someone who not only has nothing left for themselves, but also nothing left for all the people around them who are counting on them to provide. Do you know this feeling? I got nothing left for me. I got nothing left for you. I got nothing left for anyone, but I have to. But I can't. What do I do? I was remembering the other day when I was little, Mom would pick us up from wherever. When we'd get home, she'd pull in the driveway. We'd hop out to go inside, while she would stay in the car, in the warm car, in the warm sun, and she'd just close her eyes. We'd go inside, rummaging through the fridge or for entertainment or whatever, and then we'd realize, where's Mom? She's still in the car? That's weird. Let's go see her. We'd go back outside. Mom! Mom, what are you doing in there? Without opening her eyes, with one hand she'd move her finger over and lock the doors. And with the other hand, wave us away. And we'd hear muffled through the glass, I just need a moment of quiet. Now, I think we all do, like as a nation. We just need a moment. A wedding story about wine is kind of whimsical, but the scarcity of grace goes to the heart of the felt human condition. Those words of human need spoken by the mother of Jesus are echoed by all who seek the grace of God as a remedy for human failing and finitude. We're just kind of running dry around here these days. And the New York Times commentator David Brooks wrote this week as someone whose cup of hope has just about run dry. The title of his article, America is Falling Apart at the Seams. Brooks laments statistics about increased reckless driving, disruptive behavior in schools, drug overdoses, hate crimes, gun purchases, all indicators of Americans' hostility toward one another and a deteriorating climate of polarization, hatred, and fear. It's like that wedding party takes a very dark turn. Airline passengers are throwing temper tantrums. People in the grocery aisles are fighting over cheese. College students are afraid to speak in class for fear of being socially ostracized for saying the wrong thing. Brooks isn't the only one to worry. Sarah Lyall described our state 2 weeks ago as, she says, we're a nation on hold who wants to speak to a manager. And these are just the latest in a series of observations about the plight of our collective social fabric and consciousness. Articles like, rudeness is on the rise. You got a problem with that? What to do with our COVID rage? America is getting meaner. America is a nation of narcissists. What they are intoning either into the ether of newsprint and substacks is, Lord, have mercy. We got nothing left. For his part, David Brooks thinks there must be a connection between our despair and the threads of social fabric being frayed and coming loose. One tends to lead to the other and vice versa. Church attendance is down everywhere. Giving to charity is down across the board. While Brooks acknowledges the force of the virus and lockdowns on these things, he adds, something darker and deeper seems to be happening as well. a long-term loss of solidarity, a long-term rise in estrangement and hostility. This is what it feels like to live in a society that is dissolving from the bottom up as much as the top down. There must be also some spiritual or moral problem at the core of this. But why? As a columnist, I'm supposed to have some answers, but I just don't right now. I just know the situation is dire. Are we this hopeless now? Are we, as a people, condemned to drain the life out of our own cup and then out of one another's? That's the question posed in Cana. This isn't a story about one little wedding and one little problem, or it's not just a story about that. Perched here at the beginning of this gospel, this is a story about all humanity in need of help from somewhere. The very reason for Jesus being is to supply wine for the imperiled marriage union of divine and human life. When the wine runs out, Jesus' mother at first, and then just a few servants, and then all people will know who comes to deliver. In wedding counseling, I ask couples often to exercise active listening and bold assertion. They're each to make a list to the other of three things they want more of in their relationship. And then after making their list, they're to share them with each other. They're to say, I want more. One, two, three. Assertiveness is really hard for some people to say out loud what they want. And so this is good for them. And active, careful listening is hard for some people, so it's good for them too, to listen to another person say what they want. What people want more of can be something you already have and want more of, or something you don't have a lot of and you want more. Time together, going on dates, physical intimacy, communication about money. Those are answers common in many couples' relationships. I've never seen anyone write, I want more wine. But who knows? What if someone wrote what they need right now in their relationship with God? More hope. More self-confidence. More belief that tomorrow will be better. More of a sense of God's presence in my life. A sense of purpose. That life has meaning and things are going to be okay. That I can get through tomorrow and I can be better tomorrow than I was today. They have no... How would you finish that sentence in your intercession? And in your own prayer. Jesus, they have no more. Jesus, we have no more. Jesus, I have no more. If we can follow Mary's assertiveness, we have a God who is an active, careful listener, and a God whose love is sacrificially abundant even unto death. The fullest revelation of divine love embracing human need will take place at Jesus' hour, which has not yet come at the wedding, and yet it begins here. Jesus' hour is the time of his glorification, which comes through his suffering. When his ministry, his public ministry, begins, events are set in motion which will lead him to the cross. He and Mary both know this, and they both choose the path at the cost of the son's life and the mother's broken heart. The cost of filling these empty cups is ultimately the spilling of his blood. The sweet price of red wine flowing at Cana is the sponge of vinegar pressed to his lips at Golgotha. Is this really the time and place, he wonders? A wedding? A social problem in a little village? Yes, Mary insists, at great cost ultimately to her, now is the time. This is the Bethlehem of your ministry. It's time to be born. This chalice is the cradle of your grace. It's time to fill it and pour it. These few servants standing here, they are the first fruits of the new world and the first guests of the messianic banquet. Do whatever he tells you, the mother says. Fill the jars with water, the son says. John Shea writes a delightful poem called Spirit Master about imagining this exchange between Mary and Jesus. I'm going to read his poem. Mary speaks. Come now, my son. Do you tease these gray hairs? Late and laughing, you arrive and find me finding you. And entreaty is my greeting. They have no more wine. But you sweep me up in mock debate, a young man's arms around my seriousness, wrestling from me a conspiratorial smile. What has that to do with you and me, you say, winking words which invite the memory of our meals. And I tell you quick, in hushes, how I lit the fire in your eyes and held your head of dreams and poured water in your hands when you came burning from the desert sands. Beyond that, I say, you and I are strangers, I say. But games aside, I say, Jesus, I say, these empty glasses mock your Father's feast. My hour has not come, you say, making me say it all right here in the midst of sober guests. You hold me now in roles reversed, a son giving birth, a mother young again. Steward, I say, this man who kisses my eyes, this son of my love, has need of a canyon to hold the grapes that his fast feet will crush to marriage wine. Now, the teeth of our laughter blinds the steward who does not know what we do, my secret friend. Your hour is the minute the wine fails. Into our cups, some bone dry. Our failures and finitudes, our lack and our need, it's the grace of Jesus that flows like new wine. We have a God who does not drip grace as scarcity, but a God who does not know when to stop. Baskets of bread after the feeding of the 5,000, buckets of wine after the guests have trickled on home. Only the servants know at first where it came from. Only servants get a glimpse. Only servants of others know. It was just the first of the signs. There were to be others. They are all around. His hour has come, and now is the time of grace. And we need it. Thanks be to God. Amen.